So Mr. Seeker started out with the question, why are we here? I said, oh boy, here we go. We're going to have two of the exact same sermons. But he did go in a little bit different direction. So brethren, why are we here? He then went to Leviticus 23. I said, oh boy, he's definitely going in the same direction. Because I'm also going to start in Leviticus 23 in verse 27. So he went to a little bit different section in Leviticus 23. So in Leviticus 23, 27, it tells us exactly why we are here this afternoon. It says, also on the 10th day of this 7th month, there shall be a day of atonement. It shall be a holy convocation to you, and you shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. So brethren, we are here to celebrate the Day of Atonement. It is the 10th day of the 7th month, and we are here celebrating. We often use that word celebration, and often with celebration we think of food and drink. Nobody brought any snacks today. Oma didn't make the coffee for us. So although there's no food and drink, it still is a celebration, brethren. Many of us look at the Day of Atonement not necessarily as a celebration, but as something that we just have to do in order to get to the feast. But brethren, is that the attitude that God wants us to have as we celebrate this day? I know last week, those of us that were in Elmira heard a sermonette, and the sermonette speaker was talking about us being very careful not to just look forward to the Feast of Tabernacles. That there's a lot of holy days and things that happen that's part of God's plan that we need to focus on prior to getting to the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, we all talk about it. Where are you going? What are you doing? You know, who are you going with? Those type of things. That's certainly not wrong. But we need to be very careful that we don't look over some of the other holy days that God has blessed us with. That thing making a bunch of... Let's move that so we hear all that static. So, like I said, we need to be careful that we don't look past the Day of Atonement. At sundown tonight, the Day of Atonement will be over. And I know that we will all be rapidly and looking forward to not food. We'll talk about that later. We'll certainly be looking to food and drink, but we're definitely going to be looking to the Feast of Tabernacles. But between sundown last night and sundown this evening, are we celebrating and rejoicing in the blessing that God has given us with the Day of Atonement? Mr. Seeker talked a little bit about what this day pictures. We know that the Day of Atonement is an essential step in God's holy day plan. Without the Day of Atonement, the author of sin is not going to be put away. We will continue to face sin, we'll continue to face trials and tribulation until this day is realized, the day that Satan is bound and put away. In Revelation 20, we read about what is going to happen on this day. Revelation 20, beginning in verse 1. It says, then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit, and a great chain in his hand. He laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and he bound him for 1,000 years. He cast him into the bottomless pit, and he shut him up, and set a seal upon him, so that he should deceive the nations no more till the 1,000 years were finished. Brethren, that is a day that we definitely need to look forward to. Satan will soon be bound, and he will be prevented from ruling this world. The pain and the suffering that we all experience from time to time, it occurs because Satan has been allowed to rule. Once the Day of Atonement has been fulfilled, brethren, that's going to change. That is going to change. As I said earlier, we will soon be keeping the Feast of Tabernacles. We'll get just a small taste. Interesting word on the Day of Atonement. Just a small taste of what the feast and what God's kingdom is going to look like. We're going to experience joy. We'll experience happiness like no other time of the year. Yes, we have the holy days throughout the year that bring us joy and happiness, but we're going to be there for an extended period of time, experiencing that joy and happiness. We'll be surrounded by people of like mind. For most of us, we'll be at a site away from the rest of the world, although they may be there, but we're going to be with people of like mind. We'll be celebrating with people of like mind. We'll get that daily taste and that daily word that God has prepared for us in the sermonettes, in the sermons, in the song service. Brethren, we'll be able to leave this world to some extent for just a short period of time. We'll get that opportunity to get a taste of what that God's kingdom will be like sometime in the future. Brethren, we know that the feast is a model of God's kingdom. We know that God's kingdom can't compare to anything that we recreate as man, that we recreate here on earth. But we know that the feast is going to rejuvenate our faith. And we know that it's going to give us a picture and a hope for better times ahead. Does the Day of Atonement bring that same joy and happiness to our lives? Each of God's holy days provides us something a little bit different. God provides us what we need when we need it. The Day of Atonement provides many different things. Linda was talking on the way over about some of the sermons that she had been listening to about the Day of Atonement. And she talked about one after another after another. I said, Linda, you got to stop. You're giving up the entire sermon that I'm going to give. But there is a lot of different meanings to the Day of Atonement. You know, a lot of us sleep in. I slept in way longer today than I think I have in years. But is it about just kind of sleeping away the day away so we don't think about how dry our mouth is, especially when you're up here trying to talk? And Andy, I was very careful not to use big words in my sermon because I knew I wouldn't be able to say them. They're hard enough when your mouth is moist. When it's dry, forget about it. But do we think about what this day is about? God has given us this Day of Atonement. Why? 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 Is anybody thirsty? You don't have to answer that. Why would God give us a holy day, provide all of this water out there, and say, not today. You're not going to have any of that today. Is anybody hungry? Maybe. We usually tend to get a little bit thirstier than we are hungry. But again, why does God give us a day? Plenty of good food out there. I know the Kesters will be traveling home with a nice bushel of apples that the Blacks traveled down with. Mr. Kester said, you know, we're going to be smelling those apples all the way home. And I listened as I was coming in. A lot of the conversations today was around food and drink. Brother, that's a major part of our life. So one of the reasons I think God gave us this day, again, He gave us a day and said, all right, you're not going to eat today. Each time we celebrate the Day of Atonement, at least for me, I come up with a different understanding of why God might ask us to fast. As I said, food and drink are a major part of our day. When we take that away, we have to fill it with something else. How often do we think about, you know, the dry mouth and the stomach growling, and then immediately go, well, God gave us this for a reason. And then we start thinking about spiritual things. King David gave us one reason in Psalm 35, verse 13. Again, many, many reasons that God gave us the Day of Atonement. And the part of that day of fasting. King David said this in Psalm 35, 13. He said, but as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth, I humbled my soul with fasting. I humbled my soul with fasting, and my prayer returned into my bosom. Here David tells us that he fasted to create a sense of humility. Mr. Seeker talked a little bit about that in his sermon as well. Fasting does humble us, brethren. When we are thirsty and hungry, we realize that we are not self-sufficient. We are not self-sufficient. Hunger and thirst, those are natural things that God created in us to remind us that we do have basic human needs. Food and drink, very basic human need. When we are hungry, our stomach growls, and we don't drink enough water, our mouth gets dry. Brethren, we are dependent upon those physical food and drink to sustain our lives. Does the Day of Atonement help us remember that fact? It certainly does me. Does the Day of Atonement also remind us of the need for spiritual and physical drink? How many times in the last, I don't know how many hours we've been fasting at this point, but say 15, 16, wherever we're at, how many times in that past amount of hours did we think about physical food and drink? I'll tell you, last night we watched a show on National Geographic about the Grand Canyon. Really wasn't much about food and drink in there, but every commercial that came on, Subway, Outback, every single one was about food and drink. Most of the year I don't pay much attention to them, but man, my next meal is 20 hours away. Why are they showing this? Again, but then immediately the mind goes to, all right, here's the beautiful nature. I know Betsy was out on the Appalachian Trail experiencing God's creation. We watched the Grand Canyon to experience that God's creation and just the awesome power that God has. By not worrying about the food and drink, normally I'd be munching on chips or something. You don't think about God when we're entertaining all of those other different things. The Day of Atonement just helps us with that. We must turn to God and Jesus Christ, brethren, to see us through. We know that we will face trials. We will face troubles. We will have our ups. We will have our downs also. Until the Day of Atonement is fulfilled, Satan will not be bound. He is the author and the creator of all of those things. But once that Day of Atonement is fulfilled, the day that we really need to look forward to, then we get to the feast. Then we get to God's kingdom, the next step in God's plan. But brethren, will we lean on God and follow His way of life as we persevere through this physical life? As we await to become spirit beings, will we lean on God? And brethren, that is the title of the message. Lean on me. Not me, but God. Lean on God. Brethren, God has called each of us to begin a race. Some of us have been running this race for many, many years. We have many in the church that have been around a very, very long time. The Slatteries, this will be their very first feast. And I warn them that you will probably have to either stand up or raise your hand, because typically at the feast we recognize those that who's here for the first time. And then we start counting up or counting down, depending how the song leader does it, to see how long people have been around in the church. Like I said, some have been around a long time. We've been running the race very, very long. Others just started. But the ultimate goal is the same. God wants us to finish that race that He has created for us. We know that the race will not be easy. But God is there if we lean on Him to see Him through. In 1 Corinthians 10, God talks a little bit about that. He talks about endurance. He talks about following Him, even though that we may be tempted along the way. In 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, it says, "No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind." A lot of temptations common to mankind right now. Mr. Seeker talked about being tired of talking about and hearing about the election. I cannot wait till the voting is over. Even though I don't pay much attention to it because it drives me absolutely crazy, everybody you run into is talking about it. Trump or Hillary? Who cares? It doesn't matter. It's not until Jesus Christ returns and God takes over leadership of this world that any real change is going to take place. I know with Obama 8 years ago, hope and change. I'm still hoping for some change, brother. I've seen it, but not necessarily anything positive. It continues on in verse 13. It says, "No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, He will also provide a way out so that you can endure it." Brethren, God has provided us with plenty of physical food and drink to finish the race. However, we can often take for granted some of those things that we've been given. You know, we often take for granted that the nice meal, the nice drink. But when it is taken away from us, even if it's for a short period of time, we start to focus on, boy, that was nice. That truly is a blessing from God. Brethren, the Day of Atonement reminds us that we cannot live without God's continued blessing of food and drink. Think about the places around the world where they don't have what we have. A few years ago in Jamaica, we were there. I may have told this story, but speaking about food, each and every day after the lifeguard shift, they would come out with a little plastic bottle. It could have been a Coke bottle or a Pepsi bottle, and they'd have string wrapped around it. On the end of that string, they'd have some makeshift hook. And then they would scavenge for some sort of bait, and they'd throw that out into the water. And they were catching little amberjacks. They weren't much more than this. And then they would, I can't remember if they were putting them in their pocket or what they were doing with them, but they were saving them nonetheless. And we watched them for day in and day out. And finally, I asked the guy, "What are you doing?" He said, "That's dinner, man. That's dinner." So what we have been blessed with here is not what other parts of this country have been blessed with. You go into a grocery store in Jamaica and you buy bread by the slice. Not by the, How do we loaf? You don't buy it by the loaf, you buy it by the slice. They don't have the money. A lot of things are single servings. You might eat today, but not tomorrow. So, brethren, we do live in different times. When we go to the feast, we'll be in St. Lucia, a lot of the same things in St. Lucia, but we'll be feasting like no other, as many of us will as we go to the feast site. So how much more, talking about the fast as we continue to do, how much more are we going to enjoy that drink tonight than we will maybe 2 weeks from now? How much more will we enjoy that meal tonight than we will 2 weeks from now? Brethren, we forget. We forget sometimes the blessings that God has given to us. We go about our daily lives, running here, running there, and do we stop and think? For me, the Day of Atonement is that stop sign. It's that red light. Slow down, man. Stop. Remember me. If it weren't for me, speaking of God, none of these things that we have been blessed with here would be possible. So, brethren, we do need to be careful that we don't take things for granted. Do we take God's spiritual food and drink for granted? We need to think about those things much more so than the physical food that we partake of. In John 6, verse 35, it talks a little bit about not physical food and drink, but spiritual food and drink. That word's becoming almost as hard to say as complacent. John 6:35. Then Jesus declared, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." As I said, brethren, the Day of Atonement takes away those distractions of physical food and drink and really truly allows us to focus on that spiritual food and drink that God has given to us. In John 4, verse 4, this is another encounter of Jesus Christ talking about drink. In verse 4 it says, "Now he had to go through Samaria. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph." In verse 6, "Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, 'Will you give me a drink?'" In parentheses, it says, "His disciples had gone into town to buy food." In verse 7, "The Samaritan woman said to him, 'You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink?'" Imagine her embarrassment if she actually knew who that was. Interesting. A lot of incidents throughout the Bible where people had interactions with Christ that didn't necessarily know who he was. You always wonder how they might have interacted differently if they knew. In verse 10, it says, "Jesus answered her, 'If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water.' 'Sir,' the woman said, 'you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water?'" In verse 12, "Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also the sons and his livestock?" Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life." And finally, verse 15 says, "The woman said to him, 'Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to come here to draw water.'" Brethren, we need God in our lives. We need our spiritual food and drink each and every day. Just as we hunger and thirst for physical food on a daily basis, we also need to do the same for that spiritual food. As I mentioned earlier, God has called us to enter a race. If we can finish the race, we will not receive a medal or a trophy or a plaque or a wooden clock that hangs in our basement, a clock that Lori won when she ran a race. We're not going to receive those things. Those are all physical. We are going to receive God's kingdom. The race that we have started, it's not the 100-meter dash that Usain Bolt from Jamaica continues to win year after year, and it appears with absolutely no effort as he's running, smiling at the camera, crossing the finish line. It's not a 100-meter dash. It's not the 800 or the 1600-meter. Brethren, it's a marathon. It is a marathon. that we are running. It's a long race. It takes perseverance. It takes training. Our training, coming to God, praying, listening to sermons. It takes God's help to complete those things. Some of us have run a marathon. Why, I continue to ask myself. Mr. Close understands what it takes to get through a marathon. Mr. Lambert has run marathons. Bryant, Dr. Lambert has run marathons. Lori has run marathons. I'm still trying to get through the marathon and meet my goal. It's a difficult task. It really is. It's a physical task. It's not a spiritual task, but it's a physical task. To me, the reward of getting across that finish line, knowing that you completed 26.2 miles, it's worth all that pain and suffering. Again, that's a physical thing. It's a minor thing. It's just one dumb thing I decided I wanted to do. I got that medal as I crossed the finish line, and it felt like it weighed 10,000 pounds, so I had to give it to Lori because I couldn't hold on to it. A little plastic thing, but I was shot. Physically, I was not ready for that task. Rather, I'm not sure I'm ready for the spiritual task either. We got to continue to work at that. It takes that food and drink to complete the physical marathon, but it takes that food and drink from Jesus Christ and our Father to finish the physical marathon as well. Brethren, fasting reminds us how much we need God's continual blessing of that food and drink. It's an annual reminder, although we can fast at any time throughout the year. It doesn't have to be just on the Day of Atonement. And many of us fast for different reasons throughout the year. But if we did not have God, we would soon fall victim to this world. And we know that. We cannot survive without God's grace, without His love, and without that intervention in our lives. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, it talks about the need to turn to God. 2 Timothy 4, beginning in verse 1. It says, "In the presence of God and of Jesus Christ, who will judge the living and the dead, and in view of His appearing and His kingdom, I give you this charge." So here we're given a charge, brethren. "Preach the word." It says right here on the front of our plaque, "Preach the word, be prepared, in season and out of season. Correct, rebuke, and encourage with great patience and careful instructions. For the time will come when people will not put up with sound doctrine. Instead, to suit their own desires, they will gather around them a great number of teachers to say what their itching ears want to hear." Brother, how often do we see that? A lot of different churches out there. They're preaching what the congregations want to hear so that they come to church. I have a couple friends that grew up keeping the Sabbath, not necessarily keeping the holy days, but he's kind of strayed away from that in the past years, actually many years. He's looking to hear what his ears need. And we all want that. But we got to be careful. We have to be careful that what our ears want to hear is the word of God, the true word of God, not what others want us to hear. In verse 4 it says, "They will turn their ears away from the truth and turn aside to myths." Verse 5, "But you keep your head in all situations. Endure hardship. Do the work of an evangelist. Discharge all the duties of your ministry. For I am already being poured out like a drink offering, and the time for my departure is near." In verse 7, "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have longed for His appearing." Brethren, God tells us that we are running a race. He's provided it for us. He's told us it's not going to be easy, but He will be there to help us through. Just like the physical marathon, there's those aid stations along the way. There's ambulances along the way. I often thought, I'm just going to run over that thing. And the finish line was right across from the hospital, which I thought was pretty fitting. So I came around the last corner. I told her, you know what, I think I'm just going to go and run right to the emergency room. I don't need the medal at the finish line. I need IVs or something. I'm dying here. But we do. We have those aid stations along the way. The Sabbath, the Day of Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, those are all aid stations along our journey, along our race. God has an awesome plan. He has laid it out very, very specifically. He's laid out the course for each of us. We may not know what that course is. And sometimes when you're running that marathon or the race, not knowing the course sometimes is good, because you don't necessarily know how much longer you have to run. You just know you got to keep running. Brethren, we have to keep running in God's race. We don't know how long we're going to have to run. We don't know how long this marathon is going to be. We know it will have an end. We know it will have a finish line. These holy days help us through those times. David knew how important God's help was in sustaining his life. A lot of the hymns that we sing are from the Psalms. The Psalms are full of David's prayers asking for God's help and his intervention. He spends a lot of time thanking God as well. So what I'd like to do is just go through a couple of the Psalms. You can turn there if you wish. I think I have three of them here. And they're all Psalms relating to our need to turn to God for help as we run through this race. Psalm 70, verse 5. Psalm 70, verse 5. It says, "But as for me, I am poor and needy. Come quickly to me, O God. You are my help and my deliverer. Lord, do not delay." David knew he couldn't do it alone, brethren, just as we know that we can't do it alone. Psalm 109, verse 26. Psalm 109, verse 26. "Help me, Lord, my God. Save me according to your unfailing love." And finally, Psalm 54, verse 4. Psalm 54, verse 4. It says, "Surely God is my help. The Lord is the one who sustains me." And you could turn to almost any of the Psalms and get that same message out of them, that we do need to turn to God for help. Brethren, we live in a world that it is imperative that we rely on God to see us through. We know and understand that this world is not going to be a pleasant place. We understand that if we do rely on God, and we understand the importance of turning to God and leaning on God, that He's going to see us through. He is going to see us through. The Day of Atonement will be fulfilled. Satan, the author of sin, will be bound. He'll be thrown in the pit. We know that's going to happen. Until that time, are we relying on God, or do we do what a lot of this world does and rely on men? Mr. Seeker mentioned the election. We're turning to Trump or Hillary. Are you going to fix this world? No, they're not. In fact, they may make it worse. Who knows? I'll leave the politics out of it. But like I said, Obama promised hope and change. Not sure we're any better off now than we were 8 years ago. And brother, I'm not sure Trump or Clinton is going to make any difference either. But brethren, oftentimes we do, not necessarily us, but this world, they turn to men to fix the problems. Man can't fix these problems. Until Satan is bound and prevented from being the god of this world, we're going to see further and further destruction. Mr. Seeker talked a little bit about the Garden of Eden. I'm also going to refer to that real quick too, and telling you that we know that Satan started his work way back in the Garden of Eden. He has been the architect of destruction and will continue to build his world filled with sin. But brethren, that day is going to end. We heard in Revelation that the angel is going to come. He's going to come with a chain. We're going to get rid of Satan. Day of Atonement, that's what that pictures. So do we blow by the Day of Atonement just hoping to get the sundown for that drink of water? Or do we truly celebrate and rejoice and find joy in this day? Brethren, we need to hunger and thirst for God's Word. He will help us through to the finish line. Men will help as well. We can help each other. We come to services for support. That's part of what God wants us to do. We can encourage each other. We can provide each other hope. But we know that the true hope is in Jesus Christ and God. What I'd like to do is share a little story. It's actually a movie that was based on a true story. It takes place in New Jersey. There was a high school in New Jersey back in 1987. This was a pretty awful, awful high school. It was infested with drug dealers and crime. The majority of the students were not passing any of the basic skills in this particular school. Just like all states, they gave a state assessment. Kids were failing left and right. The students and the teachers were scared to death. There were gangs. There was violence. There was drug dealers on every corner of the hallways, not outside of the building, but inside of the building. It was a brutal place. It was a war zone in there. The mayor, he learned that the school was going to be turned over to the state administration if the students didn't start passing. So obviously he was on the superintendent. His name was Dr. Frank Napier. And he went to a couple of different candidates. He needed a new principal. The principal that was there wasn't cutting it. He was scared to death. He was afraid of the kids. He was afraid of the teachers. So the superintendent went to his go-to guy who happened to have been an elementary principal in the district. His name was Joe Clark. They called him Crazy Joe. And some of you, as I go through this, you may know the story. There's been a movie made about this. I'll tell you the name up here as we get towards the end. But Crazy Joe Clark, he had his way of doing things. It wasn't necessarily conventional ways of doing things. If I tried some of the things that Crazy Joe did, I'd be fired immediately. There's no doubt in my mind that my board and superintendent would not have stood for this. Thankfully, I don't have drug dealers and all that stuff in my school, so we don't need to turn to those. But it was a bad time, really bad time. Now, the mayor knew Crazy Joe's M.O., so to speak, and he said, no way, you are not hiring that guy. Basically, the superintendent said, do you want the place fixed or not? And long story short, he was able to talk the mayor into letting the superintendent hire Crazy Joe. Crazy Joe Clark immediately began to make some radical changes in the school. Immediately, he expelled 300 students. He identified 300 kids that were drug dealers, that were drug users, that were gangbangers, or otherwise just troublemakers in one way or another. He said, see ya, get out of here. Mr. Clark instituted a program to improve school spirit. He got rid of all the graffiti on the hallways. Now, graffiti tagging is what gangs use to identify their territory. So if you watch the movie, you'll see kids that would refuse to go down certain hallways because they had the wrong colors on. You don't go down a blue hallway if you're wearing red. Red is the color of the Bloods, blue is the color of the Crips, and you don't cross paths unless you don't want to come out. It was a bad place. So he covered up the graffiti. The other thing he did is he required every single student in the school to learn the school song. These kids didn't have a clue what the school song was. Not a one of them. A lot of the movie talks about him and the interactions he had with students that didn't know the school song. If he would come up to you and you didn't know the school song, there were consequences. If you fought with him about learning the school song, there's the door. He suspended you. So there was detention, there was suspensions if you refused or were not able to recite the school song. He had a way of doing things. And if you didn't want to follow his way, there's the door. He wasn't putting up with the nonsense. One of the students that he expelled was found beating up another student. One of the issues in the school was not just students were coming into the school. The gangbangers from the outside, those that were supplying the students with the drugs, were coming in, making their drop-offs in the school so that the students could sell to other students in the building. The doors would not lock. He said, this is not acceptable, so he chained the doors. He put chains around the doors and he padlocked them. He said, during the school day, these doors do not open, and he told his security people. Now, there was pushback on that. There's fire codes and such, and I can't even put a door stop in a door without the fire inspector getting on me. He didn't care. He said, these are drastic times. We need drastic change. So he chained the doors. He said, these are not to be opened until the end of the school day. Now, you can imagine this is not the best of neighborhoods where the school was, and some of these students that were being expelled, obviously they had mothers, and most of them mothers, not so many fathers in the district. And they were distraught. They were irate. They were screaming at Crazy Joe Clark, how can you tell my kid they can't come back to school? Clark likewise had different interactions with some of the staff members. They've learned to just survive. They didn't really cause waves with the students. They didn't want to be killed or beat up or whatever the case may be. So they came in the morning and they left in the afternoon. If the kids learned something, they learned something. If they didn't, they didn't. It was survival. Brethren, we're in survival right now in this world. We need a Joe Clark. We know our Joe Clark is Jesus Christ. He will come back. He's also going to come with chains. His angels are going to come with chains. And the gangbanger, the drug dealer, Satan, the devil, is going to be thrown in the bottom of the pit. This is a school. So Clark sometimes got into conflicts with faculty members. And that's kind of putting it mildly if you watch the movie. Mr. Darnell was not one of Mr. Clark's favorite teachers. He was an English teacher, and Mr. Darnell would butt heads with him all the time. And Mr. Clark was disciplining a student. A student had thrown some trash on the floor. Mr. Clark said, "You need to pick it up." The kid refused. He said, "You're either going to pick it up or you're going home." He goes, "That's not the way we behave here. Pick up the trash." So Mr. Darnell, trying to intervene, picked up the trash for the student. Mr. Clark suspended the teacher. He said, "I'm trying to teach this kid. This is not the way we behave." Well, Mr. Darnell wasn't too awful happy with Mr. Clark, and he said some things and stormed out. But the point is, brethren, when times get tough, do we follow the right way? Or do we follow some of the things that occur that we read about earlier in the sermon about the way of man? Do we follow the way of man, or do we follow the way of God and Jesus Christ? We shouldn't be picking up each other's trash. That's something that we need to do on our own. And God has a plan for each of us to do that. Another disciplinary thing that Mr. Clark had was Mrs. Elliott, the choir teacher. Now, every kid had to learn the school song, and the choir teacher played a big part in that. Every day when kids came to choir, she better be playing the school song. She had a concert that she was working on with the students. Mr. Clark said, "No, the concert's canceled. There will be no concerts until every kid knows the school song." So every day in choir practice, I can't remember her name now, Mrs. Elliott, I think was her name, she would teach the kids a school song. Things rapidly, well, not rapidly, but slowly got better. Kids started to learn the school song. The students were there, started to learn a little bit more. Despite the turmoil created by Clark's action, the school did begin to turn around. Parents weren't happy, kids weren't happy, and teachers weren't happy, but sometimes when you make change, you know you're going to affect some people, and they're not going to be happy no matter what you do. The key is, are you doing the right things? Thomas Sams, he was a chunky little kid in the movie. I believe that was actually his real name in real life. He was expelled by Clark for using crack, a drug. Thomas Sams did some work. Mr. Clark would visit him outside of school, and Sams asked to come back to school. He said, "Mr. Clark," and I can still hear the kid's voice, funny little kid, "Mr. Clark, let me come back to school. I've changed my life around. I need to learn. I can't go anywhere unless I learn." So that kind of plays out through some of the movie, and eventually Mr. Clark allowed him to come back into school, and he did turn his life around. Another student that he expelled, Kenesha Carter, he ended up reuniting this student with her mother. Never knew her mother. A lot of bad things going on in this building. Mr. Clark not only was focused on the need for the test scores to come up, he was truly concerned about his students. The name of the movie was Lean on Me. Lean on Me. And that's truly what Mr. Clark wanted to happen. He wanted his students and his staff to lean on him as they worked together to clean this mess up. Brethren, we need to lean on Jesus Christ as we work together to clean this mess of a world that we have up. We know that we can't do it until Satan is bound, until Jesus Christ returns and God's kingdom is established, but we can work towards that. As we went through the movie, things got better. They started doing practice tests. The kids started to learn a little bit more. Clark took some further steps to encourage students to do better. He offered some remedial courses for students and their parents. A lot of the parents couldn't read, so the parents couldn't help them. So he offered some courses on Saturday for them to come and try to get those scores up. Now, we got towards the end of the movie as things were starting to turn around. Kids were starting to learn. Parents were starting to get involved in a more positive way. Well, the fire marshal shows up at the school. The doors are chained. That's a big deal. Kids have to have a way out of the school in the event the thing catches on fire. So the fire chief arrests him, throws him in jail. So Mr. Clark, the one who has done all of this work to try to get the school turned around, is now thrown in jail. There's a board meeting the particular night that he gets thrown in jail. One of the mothers there is there to have Clark removed. She's really advocating that one of her sons is either one of the drug dealers or the gangbangers in the movie, and she wants Mr. Clark gone because he's cutting into her business, part of her paycheck. I'm sure the son is kind of giving some of that money he's making by selling drugs. Mom's losing out too, so she needs this guy gone so her son can get her business back. So she's advocating for, obviously, Mr. Clark to be thrown out of the school, that the school board vote that he be fired. Most of the students are outside of the Board of Education building. Masses have gathered. And they are demanding two things. Number one, that the principal not be fired, that he be reinstated, and that he's released from jail. They are in support of Mr. Clark because they saw how things were better when he was there. They didn't always agree with it, but they saw how things were better. I think about what that might look like when Jesus Christ returns, brethren. In the midst of the protest, Clark called for his students to go back home. He didn't want them involved. This was his issue. It's not the students' issue to get him out of jail. It wasn't the students' responsibility to make sure he had a job. This is me. I created this. I got to get out of it. That was kind of his mentality. In the midst of all of the chaos, Clark telling them to go back, and them telling the board to make sure he still has a job, the assistant principal comes out, and she whispers something in his ear. He's got his big megaphone that he used in the hallways and any place where he talked to students, because, I mean, he had a big booming voice to begin with, but he wanted to make sure he was heard, so he had his megaphone, and he would use that all throughout the school. Assistant principal whispered in his ear. He then took his megaphone and announced the results of the tests. They had met the proficiency. More than 75% of the school had passed the test. The state's not going to take them over. The students are doing what they need to do. The whole place breaks out in cheer and celebration. The funny thing is, all the students began singing the school song. So Mr. Clark is in tears. The assistant principal's in tears. Just kind of up there smiling. You know what? We turned it around. We turned it around. So, brethren, as I said, the name of the movie is Lean on Me. Mr. Joe Clark, he did the impossible. Now, again, this is a Hollywood movie, so it's a semi-true story. Jimmy Buffett sang a song in the lyrics where it's a semi-true story. Believe it or not, some things I made up and some I forgot. So, semi-true story. Some of the things, you know, Hollywood, they got to sell movie tickets. But the overall story was true. He came in, he cleaned up an absolute mess of a school. At the end of the movie, the crowd of students gathered, they broke into song. Brethren, what's going to happen when Christ returns? When the Day of Atonement is fulfilled, Satan is put in the pit, he's bound, God's kingdom is established, I bet you some of us will be singing as well. Brethren, it won't be an easy road. We know it won't be an easy road. We know there's going to be ups, there's going to be downs. But brethren, if we lean on God, if we lean on the things that God has taught us, if we follow God's holy day plan, brethren, we will see it through. We will make it to the end of the race. That marathon, or maybe it's an ultra marathon that we're running. Those guys are maniacs. They run 100 miles instead of 26.2. So maybe it's an ultra marathon that God has put before us. We don't know. But we do know that there is a finish line. We do know that God has created aid stations for us along the way. We do know that there's men throughout this world and women that can help us along. But brethren, we need to put our trust in God. We need to lean on God and Jesus Christ to see us through. So brethren, I'm going to end the sermon. Dr. Holloway has a song, I believe. What I'd like to do is end the sermon with the song Lean on Me. I don't know if you've heard this song or not, but the lyrics essentially, it's obviously written by a man and sung by a man, but as we listen to the song, picture Jesus Christ and God singing this song to us. So the song is Lean on Me, and brethren, that's what we need to do as we finish up this Day of Atonement, as we finish up and get prepared to go to the Feast of Tabernacles. Let us remember that this day truly is a blessing, that God has blessed us with so many things. And then if we turn to Him and lean on Him, we will see it through to the end of the race. So brethren, have a very enjoyable rest of the Day of Atonement and an enjoyable Feast of Tabernacles. Travel safely, and we'll see you back in, I think, 3 weeks is when we are back. So.